The Guardian.
She's now convicted of the crime of defamation because he's a very powerful man. So he actually he sued her and he won. There is no justice here.
That is the voice of Daisy Flores, a human rights defender from Honduras. And she's referring to the case of Gladys Lanza, a human rights activist from the country.
Women are really in a very bad position in the whole world, but in countries like Honduras, where we actually face no rights at all, women had the worst part. And women who speak up are really worse.
Gladys Lanza was convicted for defending a woman who accused a government official of sexual harassment. Lanza is just one of the many recent examples of what appears to be a systematic targeting of human rights defenders. For women, this can often have a more sinister dimension. My name is Liz Ford, and in this edition of the Guardian's Global Development podcast, we look at the challenges faced by women human rights defenders around the world. In 1995, 189 governments signed a historic agenda for women's empowerment. The Beijing Platform for Action, agreed at the Fourth World Conference on Women, made a specific call for women engaged in the defence of human rights to be protected. 20 years on, that call seems to be going unheeded.
I'm Nimanka Fernando from Sri Lanka. I've been a human rights activist for over 30 years. As a woman activist, I was always portrayed as a bad woman, an evil woman. The newspapers, editors would write or refer to us as sex workers or charlatans. The Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation, in one of the programs titled Stoning the Sinner Woman, because I spoke about rights of sex workers, I spoke about the manner in which we have the right to go and work in the UN openly, transparently. They discussed the ways and means of how to kill us, kill me, and kill other human rights defenders who are cooperating with the UN.
As we reach 20 years since Beijing, many believe we are experiencing a global crackdown on human rights defenders, and specifically those who are fighting for women's rights.
My name is Maryam Abdelhadi Al-Khawaja. I'm a Bahraini human rights defender and the co-director of the Gulf Center for Human Rights. At the Gulf Center, we focus mainly on working with human rights defenders, protection, training, and so on. And we cover 10 countries, that being the GCC 6, and then also Iraq, Iran, Yemen, and Syria, so we keep quite busy. We've seen the systematic targeting of human rights defenders in all of the countries that we cover. And they range from anything from extrajudicial killings to judicial harassment to defamation and so on. The list is quite long.
Not long after the conviction of Gladys Lanza in Honduras, female activists in China were detained in what for many were very surprising circumstances. Tanya Branigan is the Guardian's China correspondent.
There's been a much broader crackdown on activism in China over the last couple of years. So we've seen a lot of people detained and charged and convicted. But what's very striking in this case is that these young women were simply planning to put up stickers campaigning against sexual harassment. Now, of course, sexual harassment is against the Chinese law as it stands. This wasn't a big organization. They see themselves very much as individuals, I think, from my previous interviews with them. And as I said, they were simply trying to highlight the problems women face on public transport. And yet they were detained even before that International Women's Day event could take place, just a couple of days before. One of their lawyers said, look, you know, the government's long talked about the protection of women's rights and the promotion of gender equality, and that's just what they're doing. I think it has to be seen, as I said, in the context of this broader tightening of activists of all kinds. So we've definitely seen sort of more detentions and more arrests and convictions. And the concern now is that because they've been formally detained, they weren't just taken away by police, but they're going through a sort of formal legal process now, that we may yet see some of them charged. And if they're charged in China, they're very, very likely to be convicted.
Phumzile Mlambo-Nuka, the executive director of UN Women, believes that the wave of extremism around the world has definitely impacted on the way women's human rights defenders, In fact, women who make any kind of stand at all are treated.
The wave of extremism that we've seen, which is accompanied by extraordinary violence, has definitely impacted on women. Not only is the violence that we see traumatizing communities, men as well, but it also particularly targets women almost for additional violence, humiliation, because I think it is also accompanied by a stand that says, how dare you get involved as a woman?
Much of the targeting that we've seen being used against women human rights defenders, we've seen being used against the men human rights defenders as well. Anything from, you know, the attacks during protests, imprisonment, assault, torture, both physical, psychological, and sexual. Long sentences that are disproportionate to the charges that people are facing. So it's a very, very long list of tools of oppression that are being used by the government.
While both women and men human rights defenders are coming under increasing attack from governments, women from countries where they have little or no rights can be more vulnerable than their male counterparts.
Sometimes the law that defends all the citizens in a specific country will not be as protective of women as it is of men who are also human rights defenders, which means that they are much more exposed than their male counterparts. Women are killed. In many cases, they would be brutalized by rape. When they are captured, they would also be tortured in a specific way.
I'm Khulood Mahdawi, journalist, audiovisual activist, and president of Shouf Minority, an LGBT Tunisian organization. So basically, two LGBT women and activist in Shouf, also board member of the organization, have been attacked last month. First one was raped by a man who threatened her by a knife to her throat and even beat her on the face. The second one was physically and verbally aggressed by two men. We noticed an obvious rise of these attacks recently. This week, during the last days of the World Social Forum, activists from Shouf and other LGBT organizations have been attacked by a group of people inside the university campus where the World Social Forum itself was held. The rise of the attack is also parallel to the courage of activists who are not afraid anymore to fight for their right and to call for the abolition of the law 230 that criminalizes homosexuality.
Daisy Flores.
Sexual assault is seen like a way of controlling our bodies and controlling ourselves. After the coup, the first thing they actually did was to ban the morning after pill, and they keep on controlling our bodies like that. Three women were actually killed in Bridget. They were like taken out of the car and killed just over there in the street. And when we were demonstrating there, cars just passed by telling us that they were murdered because they were a whore or because we have to go back home and stay home in order not to be killed and things like that. And people think that way. And still women keep on fighting.
Sexuality is not the only way that women human rights defenders are being targeted. Mariam Al-Dalhaji Al-Khawaja believes that governments are finding new ways to try to silence activists.
One of the things that I think is very interesting is the unconventional methods that regimes have now learned to use that don't get as much international attention. Like, for example, preventing sons and daughters of human rights defenders from getting birth certificates, for example, and so they become stateless. Or targeting activists through sentencing, which makes their work, of course, in traveling and their right to movement much more difficult, which has been the case in my case.
The extent of the targeting has, at times, caused many women human rights defenders to question their work. Let's hear from Namalka Fernando.
There is mental trauma. There are times when we ourselves question whether what we are doing is wrong. There are periods when we have to remain silent because it will have implications to our families. So they use these methods to silence us and to divert our attention from actually raising these issues. You know, it becomes so personal sometimes. You are involved in trying to defend yourself. And at times this can divert you from actually handling the issue. So I think when they become personal, what we try to do is not take it as a personal attack, but to look at it as something that is coming from the system.
But why are these attacks allowed to continue? As well as the Beijing Platform for Action, the majority of UN member states have ratified a raft of other international conventions to empower women and protect their rights. One of them is the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, or CEDAW. CEDAW was adopted in 1979 by the UN General Assembly and has been described as an international bill of rights for women. But ratifying a convention is not always enough. For example, Honduras has ratified the agreement but does not recognise the committee that monitors compliance to the convention and, therefore, cannot be held accountable to it.
Before the coup d'etat, we were like going in the path of having the democratic state and just building some laws within the women's movement and trying to, you know, to get those laws according to the CEDAW convention. But those laws has just been set there. They're just sitting there. They're not working for us anymore after the coup. And they had a lot of challenges before, but now the government has actually shut the doors of the civil society, particularly women's movement.
I think accountability is at the forefront of what needs to happen. When we're talking about resolutions being passed, like the resolution on women human rights defenders and on human rights defenders in general, that's a good first step. But if they're not implemented, then it's nothing more than just lip service. It's very important that these governments are held accountable. When you have governments like the Bahraini government, the Saudi government, the Egyptian government, who are active participants in the Human Rights Council, getting away with targeting women human rights defenders and human rights defenders in general, it really, you know, puts this at the forefront of the issues of, well, okay, we pass resolutions, but then what next? How do you actually enforce these mechanisms to hold these governments accountable when they do target women human rights defenders and human rights defenders in general?
A number of people have expressed concern about this case in particular, and that's quite striking, actually, because very often when you see detentions, it really sort of goes almost unnoticed or under the radar.
Tanya Brannigan, our China correspondent.
In this case, we've had the British government calling for their immediate release. We've had Samantha Power, the US ambassador to the UN, speaking out and saying they really should be let go, and saying that the charge they were being held on, which was creating a disturbance, was really just sort of a pretext for punishing them for the issues they were raising. And the EU has also spoken out, but China has been very clear in saying, we think this is an issue of our judicial sovereignty. We don't think it's anything to do with you. Don't get involved, basically. I think what's very striking about these detentions as well is, of course, that they happened just before International Women's Day, that they happened as nations were meeting at the UN to talk about the challenges facing women internationally and to talk about the fact that it's 20 years this year since the big Beijing meeting on women and the Beijing Declaration. Now, obviously, there were questions at the time about how strong that declaration were. There are concerns this year about whether it will be watered down and so forth, but I think a lot of people have really felt quite strongly that there's this real sort of disconnect or this very jarring conjunction of these detentions set against plans to mark the 20th anniversary of the Beijing Declaration.
2015 also marks the deadline for the Millennium Development Goals and the launch of a new set of targets, the Sustainable Development Goals. The UN Secretary-General, Ban Ki-moon, says the 17 goals must uphold human rights and promote the free, active and meaningful engagement of civil society.
Overall, with the Sustainable Development Goals, what is still remaining now is to finish the negotiations. But it's actually bigger than just violence against women. It is also an issue that must arise where we focus on all aspects of human rights.
There's two ways of looking at it. It's always an issue of, well, if you separate the two, if you look at women human rights defenders as being a separate issue to human rights defenders in general, are you actually risking making it easier for governments who will say, well, we'll deal with human rights defenders on one hand, and, you know, women human rights defenders are a separate issue, so we don't necessarily have to deal with that right now. So we do have the risk of creating that kind of environment, which I think is very problematic. It's very important to reinforce the idea that women rights and women human rights, the protection of women human rights defenders, should come hand in hand with human rights in general and the protection of human rights defenders in general. They should not be seen as a separate issue at all.
it is an issue under the goal that deals with women, and because in that goal there's also the issue of violence against women. It also is an issue where we are looking at women and the rule of law, because what happens is that the rule of law, where the rule of law exists, is set aside, because this violence against women is not only perpetrated by non-state actors. Sometimes it is state actors, which means that countries violate their own laws. So we do need to work with the human rights, established human rights bodies in those countries where those bodies exist, to take the issue of women in a particular way, and to show that women are facing particular kind of violence.
Goal 5 calls for an end to all forms of discrimination against women and girls everywhere. But will these next set of goals make any difference?
It's the mentality of patriarchy that sees women as lesser beings, and therefore they have no right to stand up. Whether they are standing up in countries that are more democratic, where there is rule of law, or in countries where women are much more exposed because the laws and human rights protection is not as strong.
Daisy Flores believes the case of Gladys Lanza is the government's way of sending a direct message to women human rights defenders.
This is actually a warning. They're actually telling us that they have the tools to silence us, even though they're not really achieving the silence of Gladys Lanza. In the opening statement, the lawyer actually said that they wanted to set a precedent for women who work in this kind of organization. That's how he referred about us.
In one way, we have to be pushing for perpetrators to be brought to book. But on the other end, which is the first prize, it's actually to defend the women so that they do not have to go through this kind of violence in the first place.
The consensus is that women's economic empowerment is what is most needed to bring about lasting change. Let's hear from Hulud Makhdawi in Tunisia.
What is needed to be done nationally and globally is to ensure women their financial independence. In fact, many of them can't even report attacks because they might find themselves in the street if they do, or if anyone from the family find out about her sexual orientation. Sustainable development goals can help women financially and give them an opportunity to ensure their independence from the family, and especially from the father. It will give more freedom and security to activist women.
A critical mass of women with their economic means is an important to shift women and to reach a tipping point of the number of women that are living above poverty line and are able to make their own decision.
To put these measures in place, what is needed are the finances and resources, and also for governments to agree globally on the scale of gender inequality. How can it be done?
We need a lot of advocacy for that, because, I mean, it's almost like women's issues are a micro-enterprise of the global agenda. And yet, this is the global agenda of the majority of humanity. There's a disconnect between everybody agreeing how big are the issues that impact on women and the amount of resources that are therefore allocated for this agenda that everybody agrees is very big. It cuts across. It arises in every endeavor of life. I try to emphasize to women that we actually have to treat this as a global phenomena. The consequences for women are different in different countries. And in the review of 20 years of Beijing, that comes across very strongly. That one thing that has held us back in the last 20 years, it's been the stereotypes about women, it's been the attitude, it's been the norms, and the lack of will, or in some sometimes strategy amongst ourselves as women's movement to fight specifically those attitudes. I think we've fought some of the things that were more tangible, such as, access to health services and so on. But maybe the intangibles has, the inability to overcome the intangibles has meant that from generation to generation, we have seen the world changing, but the mentality of most of the men that we have to deal with not changing.
In the struggle for gender equality, women's human rights defenders face working against age-old stereotypes, and also with the insurmountable task of attempting to transform one of the oldest institutions in human history, that of patriarchy.
We actually have to remove the walls of patriarchy within which we have tended maybe to try and survive, and have the whole world adapting to a world without patriarchy rather than women trying to survive better within patriarchy.
In Honduras, Gladys Lanza is feeling the power of that system. On the 26th of March, she was sentenced to 18 months in prison for defamation. That's all for this edition of the Guardian's Global Development podcast. My thanks to our guests, Daisy Flores, Mariam Aldalhaji Al-Khwaja, Nimalka Fernando, Tanya Branigan, Hulud Magdawi, Pumzeli Malambo Nuka, and thank you to our producer, Carrie Stewart. All of our programmes are available on The Guardian's website at theguardian.com/global-development and on iTunes, SoundCloud and all podcasting apps. My name is Liz Ford. Thanks for listening and goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.